In this first session, we're going to be looking together at missional leadership and how we embrace the mission of God in our context, how we read the cultural moment that we are in, how we should position ourselves to be agile in mission, thinking missionally. I'm always struck, I don't know if you have ever read through John's Gospel. You get to the end of chapter 20. It's like John has organized his material and he's come into land and he says in the last verses, Jesus did many other miraculous signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book, but these are written that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And I'm probably thinking he puts his pen down. He thinks, great, you know, I've come into land at the end of the gospel there. And then suddenly in chapter 21, it takes off again. It leaps off the page again. And we hear about fish and we hear about lambs. And we see Jesus when he reappears to the disciples through a miraculous catch of fish. He's reminding them of the first time he met them. This was the first miracle. You know, the first time they met Jesus was over a miraculous catch of fish. And he said, we're here. You know, I'm going to help you to catch men. You know, and you know how to catch fish. I'm going to show you how to catch men. So the fish is the mission. Okay. But then we have the restoration of Peter with Jesus reinstating Peter. And he's saying, look after my sheep, take care of my lambs. And so you have both in this chapter, you have this sort of the mission of God taking off and the responsibility to care for the fruits of the mission. So you have both mission and maintenance, if you like, both here. And what we need to be mindful of and what we're looking at in this session is that it can be very easy for us to be absorbed by the needs and the pressures and demands of care and maintenance. And no one's saying that's not important. You know, Jesus is very specific. If you love me, take care of my dear ones, you know. So maintenance is really important. But we need to be very careful not to get absorbed by this. Well, we're here for the mission of God. That's why we're here. That's what the commission is about. Be witnesses, make disciples, go, take the kingdom to the ends of the earth. And what we want to just look at today is just to, in a sense, appraise our own balance. What is driving us? Are we driven by the demands of maintenance and care, as important as that is? Is there a danger that that can absorb all our energies, that the structures that we build around us mean it's very difficult for us to release ourselves, to give time to the mission, that some of our traditions and inherited ideas almost make it hard for the mission? You know, how agile are we able to be in reading the moment that we are in culturally and be able to respond to that missionally? We hear about the sons of Issachar in 1 Chronicles 12. Obviously, Issachar, one of the tribes of Israel. And these men had a particular skill and gift of reading the cultural moment and knowing how to respond to that. And they are particularly recognized and celebrated for their skill and wisdom, and not just in terms of the theory, but how to put this into practice. So we want to be sons and daughters of Issachar, that we are looking around us, understanding our obligations, appropriate obligations to care and take care of the fruit of mission, but individually and collectively, we've always got the mission in front of us. And we're always thinking, right, this is the moment we're living in, and this is how we're going to respond to that moment. And, you know, that everything is with an open hand. There might be dearly cherished ways. I'm not talking about sort of long histories, even new expressions of church can get locked in habits and ways of doing things and preferences that actually are sort of quite self-absorbed and quite introspective And they lose that sense of mission or imperative and say, no, let's not forget why we're here. You know, as you've probably heard it said, you know, a friend of mine often likes to say the church is the only society that exists for the benefit of the non-members. You know, we're here for the lost. We're here to seek and save the lost. That's why we're here. That's why Jesus came. And so if that gets buried in all of the other responsibilities, as important as they are, I mean, no one's saying that care and maintenance is not important, but we are here, we are a missionary organization. Every church is a missionary organization, and we have to keep that front and center in our thinking. You know, God is absolutely, you know, it is his mission. Okay, he's inviting us to, he is absolutely consumed with his desire to make his name great in all the earth and fill the earth with his glory. That is, you know, that because he knows that is what is best for us. You know, I am who I am. You know, God knows that what is best for us is to be in communion with him. And so he is consumed with, how can I reach these people with my love? How can I reach them? How can I restore them to myself? And God is on a mission. And he's saying, no, come and join me on that mission. You know, it's not that the church sat down one day and said, what should we do? Well, maybe we should have a missions board and see if we can reach some people who don't come to church. No, God is a fire of mission. And he's saying, I want you to join me in this mission. You know, just as you know, Jesus said, just as the Father has sent me, I'm going to send you now. I want you to burn with the same, you know, I love the world so much, I sent my son. You know, I'm speaking to seasoned leaders. You know these things. But this is, we just want to, in a sense, catch something of the fire of God for mission together and to think very soberly about the situations that we represent. And think, am I being distracted, absorbed, consumed by all manner of other things that actually means that the mission of God is relegated in my personal priorities and in my priorities? You know, it can be relegated by disappointment. We can think, we've tried it, it's not worked. You know, so, we can be, as I say, distracted by the ways that we've constructed our church and that makes it difficult, you know, for people to engage. There's all sorts of reasons for this, but how can we read the cultural moment that we're in your own cultural situation, and continue to be agile for mission, consumed by mission, and keeping that center front in terms of all that we're doing as churches? So there's a huge privilege for us to be invited in, gathered in to the heart of God for mission. And that is really what we're going to spend our time thinking about in these coming few days together. I often think about the fact that, you know, Jesus did not redeem us to serve our cause. He redeemed us to serve his cause. And there is such a privilege in serving the ambitions of Jesus. Yeah? Not out of demand, but out of gratitude. You know? We're all here, the beneficiaries of scandalous grace. God has been so good to us. Yeah? And out of a heart of gratitude, we say, Jesus, we want to do whatever pleases you. Yeah, not to earn his approval. We have his approval. He loves us with an unfailing love. We're his forever. But we say, well, okay, Jesus, what is it? I want to bless you. What is the ambition of your heart, Jesus? Not come and serve my ambition, but how can I serve your ambition, Jesus? And that's what mission, that's the heart of mission. So what a privilege it is day by day to say, Jesus, how can I serve your ambitions today? Yeah, I mean, he is perfectly capable of doing this without us. All right, it's very important to remember that. Yeah, Jesus isn't sat there in heaven thinking, oh, if only these people would help me. I can't do this on my own, you know. He could do this. He could do this without any help from us whatsoever. But there's a privileged invitation. come with me. You know, he gathers us around the table. Lean in. We're around the campfire with Jesus. Lean in with Jesus. Right, I'm going to share with you the dreams of my heart, and I want you to help me see those dreams come to fruit. It's a beautiful privilege. Yeah, we're not just waiting for heaven here, folks. All right, you want to pack every day with every opportunity to be part of the things that thrill the heart of Jesus. Every day that we are here, we know who knows that we've got an amazing destiny ahead of us. I mean, this is an aside, but it's a concern to me how weak a view many believers have of eternity and what lies ahead of them. You know, I was talking to one lady recently. She said, "We're just in some sort of worship time loop, aren't we, up there?" You know, I think you've got a pretty poor view of what's ahead of us in heaven. You know, this is just the appetizer. You know, and we don't get this opportunity again. You know, we don't get to go through this world again. You got one shot to say, right, I'm going to pour myself into making Jesus famous here in all the earth. And what a beautiful opportunity that God gives us. It's important to reflect soberly on the times that we live in. We were discussing this before we started today. Many of you are from Eastern European contexts. Some of us from a Western European context. We're facing all sorts of cultural disruption that will be different for each of us in our different situations. We want to learn and understand that from each other. You know, we don't want to assume that the things that that bother us in the West are the same things that are bothering people in the East. So this is why we want to have these discussions. We want to have this dialogue, learn from each other. But I mean, over the last 5 years, you know, progress in Europe has not been smooth and linear. It's been incredibly disrupted. You know, things that are happening in the European Union, you know, especially from us in Britain, we nominated ourselves out, and that's caused massive disruption for us. Even for mission, it's been huge. For us to come and serve the mission of God in Europe, you know, we're not allowed to stay, we have to leave. You think, why did we do this? You know, the whole situation in Ukraine and the disruption, the distressing disruption that is causing, the sort of the global political scene, you know, the trade wars and the change in foreign policy in different parts of the world has an impact on all of us. And the influence of artificial intelligence, you know, and which is all of these great advances by, we're a phenomenal creation, and all the things that we come up with can be used for good and evil. And there's great benefits from artificial intelligence. There's some really disturbing developments from that. Social media, issues with the climate. And the sons of Issachar, they read the Times. We've got to read the Times. Not the newspaper, but the day. We've got to read the season. We've got to understand, what are we facing here? Things have changed. We've been doing things like this as a church, and it worked, and now it's not working. What we need to reevaluate that and think, well, what is important for people here? How do we adapt to what is happening among us here? What things do we need to change in the way that we're presenting the gospel that is going to make it more accessible for the people that we're trying to reach? I mean, I remember when I was a new believer, there was a church that was at the end of my road, and every Sunday evening they would have a gospel meeting. And I thought, oh, this sounds exciting. So I would go along to the gospel meeting, and every week I would sit in the room with the same 7 or 8 people having a gospel meeting. They said, why are you having this gospel meeting? Well, this is a meeting to reach the community. And I'd only been a Christian a few weeks, and I said, nobody's coming. Nobody's coming, you know? But in their mind, they were being faithful. I don't want to dishonor them. They were being faithful. No, Sunday evening, we present the gospel. I said, but no one's coming. So clearly, somewhere in your pipeline, something has to change, because no one's inviting anybody to get to this. You know, so sometimes we can be locked into things that we've done. We have to look at ourselves, what's working, be brutally honest, what's not working. You know, what can we change? What can we keep? What can we improve? What can we stop? What can we start? You know, sort of this sort of examine what you're doing, thinking, yeah, this is working, we'll keep that. This is doing okay, but we can do better. We can improve that. This is really just a waste of energy. Let's stop it. And here's something we need to start. You know, so you look at things in this way. I'm always struck with, the gospel of Jesus. So, example, Mark 1:15. Is that what I'm looking for? So this is Jesus, just as he's calling the first disciples. He says, this is Mark 1, verse 14. Jesus went into Galilee proclaiming the good news of God. Okay, he's proclaiming good news. Come and follow me. I'll make you fishers of men. They went with him. And then he goes on to describe his gospel. He says, the kingdom of heaven is near. Repent and believe the good news. Now, in the day of Jesus, when he went onto the streets and spoke to the people that were listening to him at the time, to tell them the kingdom of heaven is near sounded like good news to them. They would have thought, oh yeah, this sounds like, we understand what the kingdom of heaven is, and if it's near, that's good news. Now, if I were to walk out onto the streets of Poland and say, you know, good news, the kingdom of heaven is near, I don't think they would understand that in the same way. Yeah, so I'm often asking myself this question, and maybe this will come up as we discuss these things to myself. And I think you need to think about this. I think this is an important question for every one of us in our mission context. What does good news sound like today? Yeah. Now, to these guys, the kingdom of heaven is near. That sounded like good news. If in my country, they wouldn't understand what I mean. So I need to say, what is it that I'm offering that will sound like good news in the context of the gospel? And there's a whole other nest of questions in there. What are the needs? How do we meet those needs with gospel truth? But what does good news sound like in your context? Is an important question for us to answer. Because otherwise, we are trying to answer questions no one's asking. Yeah. They're not, you know, they make sense to us, but they don't make sense to anybody else that we're trying to talk to. What does good news sound like? So this is what it means, like the sons and daughters of Issachar, to be agile, to read the moment, think we understand what's happening here. This is the good news. This is how we need to engage the people around us with the good news. This is how we interpret this for them to understand it in their context. Just to sort of bring this content into land in reminding us about the scope of the mission that God has for us. You know, we think of mission, deep desire to outwork the mission of God locally in the context where God has placed us. That's really important. It's important to help equip our people to understand that our mission is a holistic mission. Everybody's a missionary. We don't have just a few special people who go on mission. Actually, our job as men and women of influence in our context is to equip and inspire everybody to be on a mission, to their neighbors, to their college friends, to their work context, to their family. You know, people, very, very few people in my wider family are believers. You know, that's a mission field for me. You know, so it's very important that, you know, when Jesus said, as the Father has sent me, so I'm sending you, he was talking to everybody. You know, every one of us is sent on a mission to those. There are people in your life that I will never know and never reach, you know, and there are people that you care for in your churches or missional groups or whatever, they have access to people that we can, you know, your church leaders can never reach them, but they can. So we need to equip them to be on a mission. But also, there's the global scope of mission, and that is particularly in Europe, where we're just seeing a mixing up of the nations. It's an incredible thing, cultural moment that we're living through. You know, we are called to make disciples of all nations, and we're called to be witnesses in our Jerusalem, that's your local city, our Judea, which is our province or region. So you're taking responsibility for mission, not just in your city, but you're looking across the region, saying we're going to take responsibility. Our Samaria, which is obviously people from other cultures that are among us, that's a mission field. And to the ends of the earth, basically everywhere. There's no boundary on this, you know. And God is mixing up the nations in Europe. And this presents us with a phenomenal opportunity. You know, I said I was preaching about this to my own church quite recently, just saying, you know, we can reach 50, 60 nations without leaving our living room. God is bringing them all to us. You know, our church, we come from a very sort of English, quite white area of the nation. And when I was first involved with the church, it was 90 to 95%. Caucasian, white. Now over half of the churches from other African, Asian cultures, they've just come flooding in. And you know, one of the reasons they gather to us is because the church in England has gained a reputation maybe of moving on from the Bible. And when they see people preaching the truth, they want to gather there. So they're gathering to us, you know. So we really had to change how we approach our mission and our church. I mean, it's a beautiful thing, isn't it, in Genesis 12, when right at the beginning, I find this absolutely beautiful, right at the beginning, you know, God makes his covenant with Abraham, and he says, I will bless those who bless you, and those who dishonor you, I will curse, and in you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And Paul gives a commentary on this verse. This is an explosive verse in Genesis, in Galatians 3, when he says in verse 8, the scripture foresaw that God would justify the Gentiles by faith and announced the gospel in advance to Abraham. All nations will be blessed through you. And we know we are heirs together of the promises that God has made to Abraham. Right. God made it plain from the beginning. My people are going to be a blessing to the nations. And not just a blessing, but actually are going to unite the nations. I mean, what a mandate we have. We have a phenomenal mandate that we've got. You know, not just only to reach our own people, but to reach people of every culture and every nation around us. And to demonstrate to the world how we can live together as one society, which is God's dream. His dream is to have one new man from every nation. It can be no surprise to us that the enemy will always attack the things that God most loves and most desires. And he wants the nations to come together. We're going to come together, you know, in that day, a beautiful coming together of one new man in Christ. And for 2,000 years and beyond, the enemy has done everything he can to separate us, divide us, put, you know, us against one another in every way he possibly can. But this is the dream of God. That we're going to gather the nations. And I think it starts with us as leaders. We have to have this in our heart. We were involved with the leadership of the church in a very rural, very, very English, very remote part of England. And we prayed, God, there was nobody in our town from another nation. It was all English. And we said, God, put the nations in our heart. I do believe if you carry the nations in your heart, the nations will come to you. And so God sent one of our ladies away, an English lady. She had on her heart to go to Serbia. We didn't even know where it was. And came back married to this Serbian bear over here, and suddenly the nations and suddenly the nations were coming to us. And over a period of time, we had teams from Albania and Bulgaria and Mexico and Canada all coming, that we built relationship, and they were helping us out work our mission where we were. I think it's got to be in the heart of the leaders to reach over the wall, if you like, and to look at, you know, what's not working, what's making it difficult. We had a church in the south of Germany, and they really had a deep heart for the local refugees at the time, you know, a few years ago when lots of refugees were coming through Germany. And they worked so hard to reach these refugees, but they could not get these people to stay and integrate with their church. And they said to me, "Morris, our problem is we're too German," which I thought was a very honest assessment, you know. And what they did, I mean, I don't think this is an ideal solution, but at least they came up with a solution. They planted an international German language church next door, and that has attracted all of these other cultures and has now become bigger than the original church. Now, ideally, I would love them to have learnt to be a little bit less German so that these people could have joined them. But they said, "No, we're not going to let this stop us." And they came up with a solution, and I honour them for that. And it's an amazing thing. They said, "Why is it not working? What is not working? How can we make this work?" So I think this is one of the things I would imagine most of you here are observing and experiencing this in your context, that the nations are coming through. I mean, Vlada in Serbia, you know, we went for many, many years with a very, very small group of people. Then the war in Ukraine happened, and people were being mixed up. Lots of people that were going to study in Ukraine couldn't get there now. Many of them ended up in Serbia, and our church has grown 2-3-fold in that time, hasn't it? With people from all over the world. We have to change. We've got to change the way we were doing things, you know. And Vlad, you know, Vlad has done an amazing job in just accommodating all of that change. And you know, this is for many of us. You know, if you find your own culture is really closed and hard to the gospel, you may find God is bringing many people through from other cultures and nations that will be more open to the gospel. And that's where you may find that your growth will come in this season. So, just learning to read the moment, open our hearts to what God is doing in our day. What does, you know, just to recap some of the ideas we've been talking about here, you know, recognizing our concern for the sheep is very, very important. But, you know, we are called to be fishers of men and women, and we need to make sure that we don't lose sight of that. And if our structures for caring for what we have absorbs us, that we neglect the mission, we need to reevaluate that and balance that. We need to check our mission practices. You know, what's working, what's not working? Are there things that we need to adjust or change in any way? We need to read the cultural moment, what's happening in our culture and our context at the moment. There are many things that will be specific to your situation. I'm pointing here particularly to the mixing of the nations that we're witnessing, that is a cultural moment for all of us. And it also corresponds with God's heart, that he wants us to be experts. He wants us to model to the world how people from different nations and cultures can be God's society, you know, a functional, joyful human society in one place. And, you know, how can we encourage one another to embrace this and step into this with fullness of intent.